Welcome to episode 44 of the Robot Report podcast, which brings conversations with robotics innovators straight to you. I'm Mike Weitzman, managing editor of the Mobile Robot Guide. Thanks for tuning in. You can find us on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcast. Please subscribe, leave us a rating, and give us a review. My usual wingman on the show, Steve Crow, is out this week on a well-deserved vacation with his family. So a shout out to Steve, because I know he's listening from the beach. Have another Mai Tai on me, Steve, and slap on another layer of suntan lotion. So it's a solo show this week. But we have two interesting interviews to get to this week. And yes, both of them are mobile robot related. The first story this week is with the founders of the Robot Operations Group. In this interview, you'll learn more about what these guys are up to with the evolution of real-time remote management of robot fleets. Note that this group is open to anyone who would like to contribute. So as you listen to the interview and feel like you'd like to join, then check the show notes on the Robot Report website with details about how to connect with Joe and Florian. And now, on to the interview. I want to welcome a couple of special guests this week. I have with me Florian Pistone, CEO at InOrbit, and Joe Wiecek, Software Operations Manager at BrainCorp. And we are here to talk about the Robot Operations Group, which these two gentlemen have been a big part of. And so that's really going to be the topic for our conversation today. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Mike.
Thanks, Joe.
Hey, Mike. Great to be here.
Hi, Florian. Well, tell you what, let's do this. Why don't you guys introduce us to yourself and tell us a little bit about your background in robotics, including your day job. So Florian, why don't you go first?
So my name is Florian. I'm the co-founder and CEO of InOrbit. We're basically a data platform for robot management. I'm a relative newcomer to robotics in the last about 3 years. My co-founder has been in robotics for well over a decade and worked at Willow and a number of other places. And we identified this kind of gaping need in the market for better operation software. But what we also identified in talking to great people in the industry like Joe is that there's no community, no best practices really around how to run robots at large scale. So we started working together. I'll let Joe tell the other half of that story.
Yeah, great. So so I'm the software operations manager at BrainCorp, and I've been in the robotics industry for about the same amount of time as Florian, 3.5 years, I think, is where I'm at now, almost four. And before that, I helped run, deploy, integrate satellite communications networks around the world. So a little bit of experience with diverse hardware at scale. And you know, my team is responsible for the, I'd call it operational excellence of all of Brain's software and systems products, both our, you know, on the ground robot software, as well as the support tools, cloud tools that really help our fleet to run and run successfully. We're at 15,000 robots now. So I started 50 robots in one fleet, and now we're 15,000 robots across many different verticals and applications. And it's been an exciting run. And yeah, Florian and I met probably 3 years ago now. And we had discussed how, you know, robotics is at this inflection point where, you know, it's no longer just the academic disciplines. Now we're starting to see it become a real tangible industry, and it's just going to grow and grow really tremendously over the next decade. And I relayed a message or a story from what I call it a juncture in my career where Usenix has what they call LISA, Large Installation Systems Administration Conference, which I think they've dropped the acronym at this point. It's just LISA at this point. But I went there in 2014 when I was just a couple years out of school, and it completely changed my approach and my view on that industry at the time, because there were people who were talking about what the future is, what are we doing, changing our mindsets and talking about what has succeeded and to an extent what has failed at scale. You can learn from this industry group. And Florian and I started, and I'm like, it's like that was so important to my early career that I wanted to be able to help with a new generation of people in robotics who aren't just academic roboticists, but applying, you know, industry and scale to robots. And I wanted to, there was nothing for that. I searched, and when I first started at Brain, I tried to find a community like this, and it didn't exist. And so Florian and I talked, and now 3 years later, we have a website and bi-monthly roundtable meetings and a discourse page. And we're really, you know, helping this conversation move forward.
Wow. So again, you two are really the genesis for the robots operations group. It came out of your relationship, and Joe, you're identified the need for really this community to provide a forum for folks to get together and discuss these various topics, right?
Yeah, I'm too humble personally to take full credit. You know, there's, you know, a number of names, and I'd start to list them. I'd worry about missing people. If you go to our meetup group, you can see based on join date people who have been on from, you know, very early on conversations way back when.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've been fortunate to have joined the group and just been following you guys as a journalist for the last 9 months. But why don't you tell the audience a bit about the mission then for the robot operations group? And Florian, I know that you were really proud about the release of the manifesto. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's been a great journey. And really what our mission is at the robot operations group is to create the best practices for robot operations at scale. Mm-hmm. And like Joe was saying, we were both relatively new to robotics and in other fields. I come mainly from the cloud world. Mm-hmm. There were lots of places where you could go and meet practitioners and learn from them and share your own experiences. And that's what we felt was missing. So this idea of a gathering point for people working on the best practices for robot operations at scale is really the genesis for all of this. And as we started working, initially, as Joe said, it was a small group of highly motivated individuals. We're now almost 90 members on the meetup group. But when we started, we weren't very structured. It was really, like I said, a gathering of likely interested minds. Mm-hmm. And we started to identify some patterns in what we were all doing in our own private lives and what we were bringing to the group. And that's where the idea for a manifesto, again, Joe, I think, won't take the credit, but I'll assign it freely. He was talking about the Agile Manifesto. Mm-hmm. And we said, oh, you know, what if we could turn that into, you know, our inspiration? So the manifesto is just laying out some basic, relatively simple ideas that you can then develop further. And we identified essentially four pillars. When I talk about the manifesto, maybe for people who are listening in, if you go to robops.org, robops.org, all of this is made available there. The manifesto is actually open source, meaning if people in the audience have ideas on how to improve it, mm-hmm. they can submit essentially a merge request. It's for engineers. So essentially you can make it better. And as a community, we hope to continue improving it. But one of the things that I want to highlight about the manifesto is that we identified essentially four pillars, and we're developing those further. But essentially, if you think about the cycle of working with robots aren't perfect. And that's kind of part of the manifesto, right? You know, plan for problems rather than hope for perfection. Mm-hmm. So we identify the cycle where you first find problems, just being able to know that a problem exists through data, then mitigate problems. How do you make that not blow up or result in catastrophic failure? then what you really want is to prevent the problems, because better than solving problems is to not having them in the first place. And then fixing them so that, you know, when they do occur in the wild, you're ready for it. So that's, you know, it's a very simple concept, but it's also a very powerful concept. And I think that's the idea of a manifesto. It's not going to tell you how to do things, mm-hmm. but it's going to tell you a little bit about what your mental model could be.
Now, Florian, again, you made the parallel, and it comes out of your experience, to cloud operations. And that's a practice that's matured quite a bit in the last decade. And I know from being a part of the group that you talk often about continuous integration and continuous development. And is not that that cycle is sort of built around borrowing, stealing, however you want to say, you know, a lot of those best practices that have been developed for cloud operations, right?
Yeah, we're definitely standing on the shoulders of giants here. So this has been done at scale, at really tremendous scale in the cloud world, mm-hmm. and even in other areas. I think Joe can talk about satellite. I don't know anything about that, but in the cloud world, this idea that you have a flow of data coming in about all your servers or hosts, and you can take action based on that data is such a basic concept. And I think robotics is still in its infancy in some sense. And so it hasn't quite developed the equivalent of that level of operations. And there's a few shining lights and places where this is happening already. Mm-hmm. But our goal was to make this really widely available and to share what we've learned. For example, Joe at Brain, myself at Inorbit, and everyone else who comes in brings their own perspective.
Mm-hmm. So Joe, I think that obvious application is mobile robots. That's certainly your business at Brain, and the concept that mobile robots, in many cases now, a lot of the robots as a service business model means that people are operating these things and tracking them remotely. So maybe you can talk a little bit about why mobile robots are maybe the low hanging fruit for this application, but also is it only applicable to mobile robots?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's low hanging fruit. It's definitely fruit on the tree. but absolutely this, what we're working on, the idea of the four pillars, it's not just AMRs, mobile robots in commercial spaces. It can be industrial robots, anything that requires both interaction with what I would call the real world, mm-hmm. As well as the software and hardware systems that make robotics function. You could easily extrapolate from what we're doing for mobile robots out to any of the other robotics industries right now and in the future. And, you know, as Florian mentioned, and I've mentioned many times, stealing from the concept of DevOps, you know, if other people steal from us, I'd be more than happy to see that happen. Because, you know, we are not the be all and all originators of what we're working on right now. We mm-hmm. borrowed from DevOps, this is borrowed from sysadmin, which is borrowed from whatever was before sysadmin, which is a little bit early in my life to remember. So no, absolutely. What we're working on is can definitely scale beyond just mobile robots into any other vertical.
Yeah.
And Mike, one thing I would add is one of the things that I think has been great about the robot operations group is that we get people from all walks of life and from who look at robotics from a very different angle. So mm-hmm. we've had anything from academics to company founders to operators that are, you know, in the field dealing with robots. So it's really a really broad mix. And I think that's what makes it so rich.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. Yeah. Sorry, Florian. I was going to say, that's one of the things I'm most proud about is that we have so many different parts of the robotic ecosystem as part of the group already, not just in, you know, Bay Area, not just California, but really across the US and into Europe now. And I'm really, really proud that we've been able to grow as much as we have in, you know, relatively short amount of time.
So I recently pulled together a survey of robot standards, and I'm continuing to make that available for folks that are trying to figure out, you know, building a new system, you know, what standards need to apply. This isn't a standards body necessarily that you're bringing together here, is it?
No, and that's intentional.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, and that's entirely intentional. I will defer to Florian because he has more experience on standards body than I do. But, you know, I think it's really important to have conversations, be able to just talk about the war stories, the experiences, the best practices, the things that we've seen fail and seen succeed without bringing in, you know, formal standards practices, without publishing this is how it shall be, without, you know, all those requirement statements. We definitely keep an eye on different standards. And, you know, for example, we've talked pretty deeply about interoperability over the past year, keeping an eye on things like the mass robotics standard that was just announced a week or two ago.
Right.
But no, we are not trying to form any of our own standards so much as publish best practices based on the experiences we've had.
Yeah, as Joe said, I have some experience with standards, and if you could see me, you could see the arrow sticking out of my back from that experience. So I think the dynamics of a standards organization are very different. So while everyone comes together to compare notes and so on, at the end of the day, you know, to work a little Mandalorian phrase here, the standards will say this, it is the way, right? You know, and the one true correct way of doing things, and everything else is incorrect. That's usually the stance of most standards. And we assumed that that would emerge, that there were other organizations already working on. I think usually what will happen in an, you know, in the beginnings of an industry, it's not that you don't have a standard, it's that you have 17 standards. And then when somebody doesn't like the standards that exist, the best solution is to create the N plus one standard. So, and then over time that settles down, but given the wide array of robot types and scenarios and where they're deployed, that may take a while. So what we wanted is more of a, like I said, a gathering place where no matter what kind of robot, no matter what kind of technology, we try to be very careful during the meetings to not make it too specific about one solution or one technology. And I think that's helpful. It's helpful to have that, and it's a complement to all the groups that are working on really important standards right now.
The robot operations group is a sort of a help group, and for folks that that want to come in and say, "Hey, I'm struggling with this aspect of my fleet, or finding myself cornered here," has anyone else had this same problem? And it's a great place to sort of discuss how to solve some of those problems. Is that
exactly? And it's not just the current problems. You know, there have been questions raised or discussed before of, "Hey, I've had, you know, I'm at 100 right now, and how do I, like, what are the problems I'm going to see in 6 months, a year, 2 years?" And the great thing about the group right now is we have people who have been down this road and who are still, you know, forging ahead and discovering new problems at new scales. But it also allows those people who are, you know, a couple of phases behind to start thinking about these problems, like Florian said earlier, before they happen rather than as they're happening. So you can at least have a little bit of foresight, a little bit of preparation for the problems that will inevitably occur as you start to scale.
One of the things we like to talk about, Mike, on the manifesto and in the group is that in the journey that companies go let's say from 50 robots to 5,000 robots. So that's the super interesting scaling stage, and things change very dramatically. So mm-hmm. what worked to get your first robots working and in the field is most likely not going to work when you're at hundreds and then thousands of robots. So part of what we want to do is to maybe give people a heads up based on what others have learned in going through the journey. At the end of the day, this will make it easier to see robots at scale, which is, I think, what brings us all together, is we're all super passionate about robots in the real world and how they can help, whether it's with food production. So for example, we recently had guest speakers from Verdant Robotics, and they're doing great work in ag tech robots. Mm-hmm. And we'll continue to have guest speakers on the in our weekly meetings, or sorry, monthly meetings. We also tackle specific topics. So we have a webinar coming up on interventions. So what happens when you do need to step in when there's a problem? So all of this is part of sharing the knowledge. Mm-hmm.
So tell us who else or what kind of companies might you like to see join the conversation at Roke? Is there a voice that is maybe underrepresented right now that you'd like to do some more recruiting for?
So I wouldn't necessarily phrase it as different kinds of companies. You know, we have people show up from everything from, you know, idea phase in terms of actual robotic applications, you know, companies that are doing support and fleet management software. We have companies that are doing connectivity and solutions there. Maybe a little bit more of the hardware presence would be a good thing to have in terms of, you know, I can tell you that, like, for sensors, for example, from my own experience, you know, firmware updates when you don't have physical access to a robot start to become a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. And so maybe a little bit more presence there. But in general, Mike, I'd almost rather say it's not so much the different verticals of companies that I would like to see represented, but rather more diversity amongst those verticals. I'd love to just see this become a single source of kind of expertise and, you know, knowledge share mm-hmm. for the industry. So it's not so much who isn't represented that should be represented, but rather how do we get more representation from the companies that are currently here? And I'd just love to grow it as, you know, really just bigger roundtable discussions, you know, bigger ways to share those war stories and work towards, you know, publishing potentially, not as a standard, but just as documents, you know, what should we prepare for in the future?
So what do you think the ideal outcome then is for Roke in, I don't know, 3 to 5 years?
Man, I just really hope we can meet in person again. You know? Right. I love the roundtables. I think that virtual has really allowed us to make those roundtable discussions open to a wider audience, regardless of geography. But, you know, like I mentioned, I would love to see this be, you know, like that LISA conference. I'd love to see it be a single point of, here's where I know there are going to be smart people. Here's where I know there are going to be people with experiences where I can network and have these conversations. And I just want it to be a source of expertise in the industry, whatever that looks like.
And I think from my perspective, even beyond the Roke itself, like, our mission is around robots at scale. And what I'd like to see as an outcome is really robots everywhere, taking some of the burden off of humans, collaborating with humans, mm-hmm. and to realize that vision of a world where robots are commonplace, they're our coworkers. I think we need to develop a lot of this. So if we get there and Roke plays even a small role in helping facilitate it, then I think we will have accomplished everything we set out to do.
So Florian, do you have anything planned for, the next phase of evolution of the Robot Operations Group?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Mike. So the first thing I'll mention is the Roke is a both a labor of love and not our day jobs for anyone. So it's open to participation from anyone who wants to move things forward. Mm-hmm. On the website itself or on anything else. But a couple of things that I'm super excited that are coming up, and I think you're one of the first to hear about this, is that we've been doing essentially a series of interviews mm-hmm. to practitioners with a lot of experience. We're calling it RoboOps Masters. And I think it's really, really inspiring to hear from them. I spoke, for example, with someone who's been doing service robots for 3 decades.
Wow.
And finally, the technology is catching up with his vision, actually. So I think it's really inspiring. And those will be posted on the website soon. The other thing is, since we're going to continue doing offline meetings, we're recording the meetings and those will be available. So if people missed a meeting or if the time of day didn't work out, we do really want to have people around the world participating, but it's not possible to find a good time for everyone at the same time. So you're not going to miss out completely. You'll be able to watch past episodes, past meetings. So I think that on an ongoing basis, we'll continue improving this when we have a little bit of spare cycles.
Great. Well, I think that's again, adding to the overall community and as you grow across borders now, I know you've been stretching, you know, to Europe and to other areas, it'll help extend your reach.
Definitely.
Well, it's certainly an interesting path that both of you have jumped on. And sometimes it's back to the old parable of you just have to leap and see where you land. So why don't you tell our audience how they can participate?
So Florian mentioned it earlier today, but it's robops.org, robops.org is our main landing page. And that has links to two different groups, both the meetup group where you can sign up to get the invites to our monthly meetings. We're right now on the scale where one is the roundtable and the next month is a lecture, and then we just rotate through that. And then the online discussion group, we host a discourse on our site as well. And once you go to robops.org, you can get links to both of those in the gray box on the bottom.
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys for joining the show this week. And I think this is, again, a fascinating area of conversation. And I think you guys are doing a great service to the community in your passion and your experience in this topic. So I wish you guys all the best and good luck in this next year.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Mike. We really appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Florian. So just to recap the story, if you're interested in joining the conversation, go to robops.org. That's robops.org to learn more about this organization and to read their manifesto. The site also has links to their meetup group and to their Discord server. For the second half of the show this week, I was able to sit down with Mike Behrman from Vecno Robotics for a discussion about the ongoing evolution of mobile robotics standards. If you're following along, you'll know that I've been shining a spotlight on AMR standards, following the recent release of the RIA 1508 AMR safety standard. I've posted an extensive list of all of the standards that impact the design and deployment of mobile robots on the Mobile Robot website. There you'll find a link to every relevant standard that impacts the development and deployment of mobile robots. There will also be links to all of this content in the show notes. So with that, let's get on to the interview with Mike Behrman. All right. Well, I want to introduce you guys to Mike Behrman, Chief Operating Officer at Vecna, for a continuing conversation on the topic of standards. So, Mike, welcome to the show. And why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Vecna?
Absolutely. So my name is Mike Behrman. Like you said, I've been with Vecna for, in one shape or another, for 17 years, worked very closely with the founder, Daniel Theobald. And Vecna Robotics is driverless forklifts, driverless tuggers, automated vehicles, robotics that are able to help in the warehouse setting to move materials.
Great. Well, on the topic today of standards, you were involved with the R1508, the recent R1508 standards committee. So tell us a little bit about your experience participating in that committee over the last year or two.
Absolutely. It was a great experience participating in that standard. It was the first time I'd participated in a standard making body, and it actually inspired me to join a few others. but it was a great and diverse group. We had representatives of small robots, large robots, manufacturers, integrators, robotic arms, just a lot of different perspectives. And I think that was just incredibly valuable to come up with the standard that we ended up with.
Wow. So you may be a glutton for punishment here, Mike. I've been involved with several standards bodies in my career, and I can say a couple of them went well, and one other one I can remember was a lot of politics and a lot of maneuvering. But it's always interesting if you enjoy that sort of back and forth. And looking back over your experience then with this standards body, how did things evolve for you and for Vecna through this process in terms of what you guys were trying to accomplish and put forth for the goals behind this specific standard?
So originally, I decided that it made sense to participate as an organization because we recognized that there wasn't a good representation of the bigger robots in the committee. Hmm. And so when we saw an early draft, there was some language about if there was a emergency, you'd have to be able to pick up, remove, or just push the robots. And obviously with our robots that weigh, 3 tons, you're not going to pick it up and move it. And so we realized that we needed to make sure our voice was heard. And so we decided that I would participate. And so I went and attended the meetings and was able to participate. And everyone there was very receptive. It's just another perspective that was very valuable to add to the committee. And so that was kind of the genesis of our participation and ended up being extremely valuable from our perspective to get to know other industry players and to have a voice in making sure that all types of robots were covered for the standard.
And are you happy with the outcome? In the first, I know there's still several other parts here that need to follow up, but at least in part one, with what made it into the first release?
Yeah, we're absolutely very happy with the standard. We think that they did a very good job, that there's just a lot of experience on there. And so they hit the right notes to make sure that safety was a priority. Mm-hmm. And I think we added a few things to the mix with our voice. And we think the resulting standard is something that is going to stand the test of time and make a big impact on allowing for a greater adoption.
Hmm. So tell me a little bit then about with the outcome, how did that impact your product line or your roadmap or your feature set?
So one of the things that came up through this is that we recognized we needed to have sensors that saw a little bit higher to cover the whole envelope of our vehicles. And that's something that we are able to do fairly rapidly with some of the newer 3D LiDARs that aren't a single plane, but are going up and down. And so with that, we are able to obtain compliance for all of our vehicles with the new standard. And so it definitely had an impact. It took a little while to actually, from when we had the discussions to when it was finally released. And so in that time, we were able to make all of our robots compliant before it was officially released.
Sweet. So I know you've had several releases of product here in the last quarter or two, either in anticipation of the release or in the same timeline now with this standard. So all those latest release products that you're going on the record and saying they're now compliant with the standard as it sits today. Is that right?
That's correct.
Great. So having sat through this and worked, as you said, with other industry leaders, why do you think standards like this are important to this industry?
think they're important for a number of reasons. First, I think it's very important that the users are able to be confident in the safety of mm-hmm. the systems. And this group of individuals were able to draw on past practices, other standards to put together something that can give everyone confidence that robots were safe. If they're not safe, then you don't want them in your facility. Because of that, that standard that has been set, it's easier for new entrants to come in and know what they're building to instead of kind of having a wild west of building without standards. Anytime there's a safety incident for any robot, it hurts the entire industry. So with these safety standards in place, we feel confident that the market will continue to grow for everyone.
I think that's probably why the RIA, now Automate A3, had a hand in specifically this standard. And frankly, they've done that for the last four decades as well, trying to make sure that any incident is managed and handled and resolved in a way that is best for the industry going forward, right? So, we've had a few other standards that have existed prior to this, and this sort of filled in a gap between several other related things that didn't quite cover or overlap, what was necessary. But why do you think that, this standard is important at this time in the industry? What is it from your perspective that makes this important at this point in time?
I think you nailed it. There was definitely a gap between a couple of different standards. The R1506 standard for industrial robots, which are manipulators, think of robotic hands, and B5605, which was primarily for automated guided vehicles. Mm-hmm. And so robots, as they continue to gain greater and greater capabilities, and one of the main capabilities was to be able to navigate around obstacles, to not follow a fixed path. We needed to have a standard that reflected that in its wording and its genesis and kind of in its intent. And so that's why R1508 is a great standard to help the AMRs, the mobile robots that are aware of their environment and able to navigate around obstacles instead of following fixed paths. And so with this, that gap has been closed. I think in the past, there would be some customers that would say, which standard are you compliant with? And none of them really fit for AMRs. And so with this gap being closed, I think the customers, the end users, are going to have greater confidence in the safety of the vehicles that come into their sites.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, there's always the risk analysis was the only other way to sort of cover those gaps, but everybody was doing it probably in a somewhat inconsistent manner. So now there's some guide rails around that risk analysis, and this standard helps to provide a backbone for that type of deployment documentation, right, before the systems go live with employees working around the systems, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it having the standard just gives those that aren't working as intimately with the robots a lot more confidence. In some sense, there was a feeling that those individual risk assessments were a little subjective. And mm-hmm. Since they weren't tied to a standard, what would it be enough to mitigate the risk? Would there be, liability or challenges along those lines? And with the standard, now we know kind of what is the standard to be measured against, and those risk assessments are done into context now, and it makes it just a lot more comfortable for users to proceed.
So from where you sit in, Vecna's position in the industry, and obviously there's going to be a couple of other parts now to the 1508 that need to follow through here to add extensions to areas that weren't able to be finished. I obviously wanted to put a stake in the ground and get this first part out the door. But are there other areas in maybe mobile robots, robotics design or operations that you still feel are necessary to extend the coverage of this or other standards in the future?
Yeah, I know R1508 is going to be working on kind of an integrator's guide and also a user's guide to safety. It's kind of parts two and part three. And those, I think, are very important and will kind of further the path along to safety and helping greater standardization, greater confidence. One of the other standards boards I'm working on is the Mass Robotics Interoperability Standard. And we think that that's an incredibly important standard because there's just a lot of robots out there that solve different problems, and we need them to be able to work together in the same space. The Mass Robotics Standard is making it so a customer can see all the different robotic systems on one single map. And that's very powerful to help them understand. And it sets the basis for future kind of interoperability between robotic systems from different vendors.
I think that's a great, we've been following the announcement this last week for the Mass Robotics Interoperability Standard, and customers acquire systems from different vendors. There's even in the case of Vecna with your large machines, there's likely to be other systems running around, floor scrubbers and smaller automated robots. This becomes a need for end users to be able to manage, to be able to charge, to be able to, you know, all the fleet management pieces. But as you said, simple things like, can I see them all on one map instead of a bunch of disjointed connections and trying to figure out what's going on, as sort of the next level of innovation when you think of where some of the supervisory systems need to go in this marketplace.
Absolutely. I think that, just a very simple use case of there's a lot of pallet moving robots, and having a robot that's able to pick and to place it on top of those pallet moving robots is something that will make the use case so much stronger for all the users. And so that's when some of the interoperability standards will allow for some of that activity to go forward. And we're working with different organizations already to put together some pilots of the standards, doing this type of work using the interoperability standards from Mass Robotics.
Yeah. Well, Mike, while I've got you on the phone here and sort of talking about Vecna, anything you can share with us about exciting things coming down the pipeline for Vecna in the next 3 to 12 months?
Absolutely. So just recently, we launched our low lift vehicle, which is moving pallets up to 6 feet. So pulling and picking two conveyors. One of the things that we're doing is kind of a conjunction of all these standards is trying out the interoperability. And so we'll be picking and placing pallets to another company's robots for a customer at a customer site. And so we're looking to continue to push the envelope on interoperability. And at the same time, we continue to do research and push to reach to higher heights and accomplish more things with more vehicle types. But those will be coming soon, and you'll probably be seeing more press on those things.
Well, I want to thank Mike Behrman, Chief Operating Officer at Vecna Robotics, for joining me today. Mike, it's been fun to sort of talk through the experience of being on a standards body and Vecna's roadmap for the future. So thanks for joining me.
It's been my pleasure, Mike. Thank you so much.
That's it for episode 44 of the Robot Report podcast. Thanks to Florian Pistone, Joe Wiechek, and Mike Behrman for joining the program today. New episodes of the Robot Report podcast drop each week. We're now available on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, leave us a rating, and give us a review. And if there's someone else you think might be interested in this episode or the show in general, please share a link with them. On behalf of Steve Crow and the entire Robot Report crew, I'm Mike Weitzman. Please enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll be back again in a week.